Jansen bops to the top. We've got Dorf on golf and Goofy on soccer. And there ain't no party like the 8th Mario Party. This week on 30-2010.
30-2010. 3 decades, every show, sometimes associated videos. 30-2010. Surprises are awaiting as we're going to the 80s and the 90s and 2000s. On 30-2010.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Laser Time's epic portal into the past, where we look at this week in history, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago. That's right, exactly what was happening at this point in time. Try and remember with us. Welcome to 30-2010, everyone. I'm Chris Antista.
I'm Pirate Master Dave Rudden.
I'm adorable team trio Diana Goodman.
this week, oh man, we're looking at, I didn't say that last time, did I?
Don't worry, I dropped it in there. But yeah, this time around, it's May 26th to June 1.
May 26th to June 1st. We're into June. Yeah. The movies should start ramping up.
Yeah, school's out unless you're in a lame area.
Unless you're stupid like me, Dave, who had to go in the summer. But yes, this week in 1987, you want to get started with some news? Ooh, local news if you're from San Francisco like us. The 50th birthday of the Golden Gate Bridge draws 800,000 people to commit. No, more than... More than the population of San Francisco, the bridge is so weighed down it flattens out.
It flattens out. People were like trapped on there. Like, I was not in the city at the time. I've heard stories about like people brought strollers and bikes, and there's so many freaking people. They did not crowd control very well. The bridge is like dropped like 10 feet or whatever. Shit. People are like throwing their bikes over the side. Like, I can't move with this bike. Get me the fuck out of here.
Oh my God.
Like it made like an audible noise too, which is like, imagine, ugh. Just the how scary that would be.
Wow.
But it's like before the age of like social media and stuff. So like, unless you were there.
It's probably like one shitty news clip.
Yeah.
Or a silent Super 8 camera footage. Somewhere out there on the web. We challenge you to find it.
Yeah.
On May 28th, 18-year-old West German Matthias Rust lands a plane in Red Square.
Yeah. For funsies.
A little kid, an 18-year-old lands a plane?
Yeah.
Or is the Red Square the important part of this? I don't know where that is.
Both. I mean, it's the Red Square is the
commie or Indians?
Dead center of Moscow.
Oh, okay.
That one.
Okay.
Sounds like he's really stirring up Shiza.
All right. I'll take it. But more important for me, May 29th, John Landis found not guilty in the 3 onset deaths that occurred in the Twilight Zone movie.
Yeah.
We lost Vic Morrow.
Also involving aviation.
Yeah, yeah. I've done a ton of research on that, and you can very much see the incident on YouTube if you care to. Twilight Zone, the movie, where a bitter old racist wakes up at different points of history and locations where oppression is occurring, and during the scene, the Vietnam scene, I believe, where he's rescuing two Vietnamese children, a helicopter fell from the building at around in the early morning hours and decapitated. I believe 2 of them.
Yeah.
And you can't really see much in the footage, but it's like, it's very clear there were people standing where now this crashed helicopter is on stage. And this essentially got a great director, John Landis, may have booted out of the big guy league of Hollywood. I remember.
Yeah. I mean, I think it affected his long term career. Mm-hmm. I mean, it took forever though. I mean, the incident happened in 1982.
That's true.
And then the trial took like 6-7 months.
The movie was highly delayed because the movie was like, I think, a vanity project for Spielberg and his director buddies. Like it wasn't something the studios were excited to make. I loved the show and the movie. I do love the movie. But it was delayed for a while because of that as well.
Yeah.
And I think John Landis had kind of made his reputation of like, I'm a real hard worker. Everybody else works hard too. We stay after hours, and this kind of happened in the early morning hours, way after some would say it's appropriate to keep people around and working, where people get careless.
I mean, and there were things with the kids weren't supposed to be on set, and you know, they were like trying to hide them from the people to see them. They were working too long. Then I think there were some problems with... It's the explosions that did it. It's all the onset explosions fucked up the helicopter.
Yep.
And, yeah, and 3 people got freaking killed.
Wow.
But, yeah, him and I think 4 other folks, like the pilot, production manager, one of the pyrotechnics guys, were all charged with manslaughter.
I don't know how they got off.
Yeah. And I guess they proved that it's, you know, there's a fine line between an accident and negligence. And I guess they got past that point.
I guess you can't prove that it's negligence, but... clearly those families are owed some money.
There was a settlement.
Sure, I don't think this wasn't a civil trial. This was a criminal trial. It sounds more like.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this for the part of that movie that I forget.
Yeah.
I always remember the cartoon one, and I remember the airplane one, and I forget the other one.
Yeah, well, that would be this one. Yeah. It's the first one in the Twilight Zone movie after the Albert Brooks, Dan Aykroyd sequence. But speaking of movies, Beverly Hills Cop is number one. I guess, no idea why.
An aberration of a week where there are really no big wide releases.
Like seven movies last week.
And then this week it's like, I guess last was the previous week, Memorial Day, I think. And you want to get people in for that, and then who cares the next week?
Maybe that was
It's like putting out a video game the week after Christmas. Like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
Everyone already spent their $5 on going to the movie theater in 1987.
And they squeaked by with Summer Heat this week, which I just looked into, and it's like, this movie doesn't exist. It has no fans.
Yeah. No.
Anthony Edwards, Laurie Singer. Is it a period piece about a woman who gets lonely and leaves her husband?
Something like that.
So I saw Anthony Edwards with a big hat, and like, there's no trailer. It doesn't really exist online.
Yeah. I only saw that it opened up at like the 15th in the box office that week. Made like $100,000.
Come up against Chipmunk Adventure.
Yeah.
Like that's insane.
Yeah.
But we also have, thank God, we're rescued by Tim Conway.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
For a quick jolt of comedy. Get Tim Conway's new video, Dorf on Golf. As Dirk Dorf, athlete extraordinaire, Conway shows his form.
I think I blew a tube on this.
And shows you how his caddy, Leonard, improves his game.
Caddy, Vincent...
Vincent Schiavelli,
yeah.
Is that the guy from Ghost, the really tall, scary guy?
Totally.
Oh, I hate that guy.
One of the Milos Forman movies.
That guy
rules. That sequence is one of the scariest fucking things I've ever seen in my life, by the way, when he confronts Patrick Swayze in Ghost. That is terrifying.
He's a ghost that scares
another ghost.
He's a ghost that scares a ghost. That's how good he is.
It just gives me goosebumps just thinking about it. But
man,
Dorf, and I don't mean... I hate when I say that, like, this movie has no fans, but... I assume Dorf has its fans, but they don't update wikis or write articles about Tim Conway's little person character.
Yeah. So I never saw this, but I saw this commercial probably a million times.
Yeah.
I don't know why and when it aired, but I just kept seeing it.
Mm-hmm. I understand, Tim Conway, he's pretty funny. I mean, he was on Carol Burnett's show. I like Tim Conway.
This could be the most unfunny thing in the universe that doesn't undo Tim Conway's legacy in the slightest.
Yeah, but just, oh, look, he's a guy on his knees pretending to be
or in this case, it's Tim Conway. Like, somebody dug a hole in two holes in these pristine golf courses, and he's in them up to his knees, and they put shoes on his knees, and he looks all small, and it's a lot of, let's say, cheap America's Funniest Videos-esque sight gags. Probably a little more well edited.
Yeah, I mean, these just look like whatever mid-level country club golf course, but I would love it if, like, Jack Nicklaus lost the U.S. Open that year with PGA Tour because he hit one of his balls hit where Dorf
where did this
dug a hole
come from.
sorry, that's this is the Dorf hole.
The Conway course, I see. You want to take a Conway on that? That's what we call it around these parts. But that is literally it for movies.
Yeah.
And we move into TV. And a show I've heard of and know nothing.
And yeah,
nothing about.
I mean, just. Like movies, and it is going to be across all decades. We've finally hit the end of the normal TV season, so we'll have some TV movies, assorted TV shows here and there, pilots that are getting burned off. But yeah, like most shows have had their finales already. A couple stragglers here and there, but like it's going to be a little bit of a weird time.
But the shows that I didn't grow up watching either when they aired or in syndication, such as The Scarecrow and Mrs. King.
Yes.
Oh,
which you could literally show me a picture of anything and I'll believe you that that's what the show is.
Yeah, so it's a... one of many kind of crime procedural, not procedurals, but it's like it's a couple that solves crimes together. This one stars Kate Jackson, who's one of the original Charlie's Angels, and Bruce Boxleitner, who is
from
an
Tron.
Actor in a lot of things, but I could not put a face to
Tron.
His name. Oh, he's Tron.
Yeah.
But here's the theme. It's a nice. It's an instrumental thing, so we can talk a little bit.
Oh, man, this sounds rival.
And we always embed the videos underneath, and it's one of these so amazing, like, tons of clips in one intro that I would love to see done on the greatest TV event in history on Adult Swim, but they don't do that anymore.
Aww.
It's a romantic spy series.
Yeah, so I think this one is set up in that, like, Bruce Boxleitner, I think, is like a government agent or something, and he just runs into this housewife, and he needs her to help him solve crimes for some reason.
And it aired from 1983 to 1987. Good on you, yeah. Scarecrow and Mrs. King. This is the last time you'll ever be mentioned.
Yeah.
Until the reunion episode, 10 years from now. We also have this week... Ooh, what is this?
There's an ABC movie... A TV movie that aired about the crack epidemic. I don't want to say anything else about it because the cast and the name of it are right here in this trailer.
Oh,
so I'll just let
this is early on in the crack.
Yeah,
panic.
ABC's ahead of the curve when it comes to TV movies.
Yeah, we're a couple years in.
Last week we had Euthanasia in 1987. This week we have the crack epidemic.
Yeah.
But just play because it's got a good cast and a great title.
They call it crack.
My son was not a dope addict.
A killer drug, wasting innocent lives.
Looks like we got a freebaser here.
Ed Asner.
Oh, my God.
An ABC Theater presentation of Cracked Up.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It sounds like a Gallagher comedy special, but no, it's a serious movie about Cracked Up.
Cracked Up! Go back 2 seconds. This is a shout-out to Brett, just to the 15 seconds on the clip. Because it's got what Brett always craves at the end of one
R.I.P.
of these.
Yeah. I just like how he said Ed Asner with a question mark, as if I'm pronouncing this correctly.
Here.
Ed Asner.
Oh, my God.
An ABC Theater presentation of Cracked Up.
Tuesday.
That's not quite Tuesday. This is like, because that guy, this is the Tuesday guy, like after a bad crack binge. Tuesday.
And this next thing, Dave, I feel like you're mocking me.
Look, it was there on the schedule.
No, this is when it aired. I just didn't think we just did a Laser Time, a pretty exhaustive one for me, because it took a lot of research and editing. And we hollered out to a special guest, but essentially trying to find the origins of the Disney Afternoon, the animated syndicated block that we watched on a daily basis that evolved a rotating group of series from Disney, but mainly Gummy Bears, DuckTales, Chippendales Rescue Rangers, Tailspin, Darkwing Duck, Goof Troop, yes, Bonkers, if you need me to go that far. But where did that start? And like, just because DuckTales is the first show Disney decided we're going to make 65 of these up front and they're going to air every single day.
Jeez.
And if you look at those episodes, I tried to convey it in audio form. If you look at those episodes compared to animated output on television, it looks astonishing and holds up way better than Danger Mouse, than He-Man, than all that other garbage that was coming out around that time. But I reached out to one of the pioneers of the Disney Afternoon, Tad Stones. He's retired now, but you can find him on Twitter. He's happy to talk to people. Really nice dude. He created Rescue Rangers and Darkwing Duck. He's their credited creators, but he was involved with all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to solidify where did... DuckTales is based on a series of comic books by Carl Barks, but like, how long did people want to do this? Because it looks like there's a pilot that dates back to 1982.
Wow.
And Tad did shed some light on it, that it was something that was proposed and worked on, and then people got kicked off the project, and people would come in and work on it, and then leave the project and come back on and work on it. And if you bother to watch it, and I say don't, because it's pretty terrible, Disney's never released it other than May 27th, 1987. It's never been on any home video formats.
Mm-hmm.
But it is essentially a pilot for DuckTales, but also a pilot for a character called Sport Goofy that I'd never heard of, and my research couldn't uncover a lot on. Even Tad is like, I don't fucking know. Like, it's just this thing that they have, a merchandise line, and I'm like, yeah, I read that too, but I can't find any evidence. If you follow my Instagram, within 6 days of that posting, I walked into a record store in the city I'd never been into, and there right in front of me is the Sport Goofy missing piece. I found it. I didn't buy it, but like, Sport Goofy...
Did you open up the lunchbox?
I didn't.
You never know what's inside.
I don't want to tell people
where, a script or something.
Where it's at, because I intend on buying it. It was only $10, but it's like, Diane and Dave can attest, we're in a room filled with useless crap.
Yeah.
I don't need a lunchbox sitting here for something that I just wanted as proof of its existence. But more importantly, it does seem to have been somebody at the Disney company as far back as, let's say, 1981-82 was interested in bringing a DuckTales-like series to the market. Scrooge McDuck and the Nephews. Those are pretty much originated by Carl Barks. He created Scrooge and almost everybody else in DuckTales.
Mm-hmm.
But that teaming up had... It happened years before, technically, than DuckTales. It's very weird. It's called... What is it?
Sport Goofy.
Sport Goofy
and Soccer Mania.
And Soccer Mania. But it is essentially a DuckTales show.
Yeah.
Scrooge McDuck. It's the one gap In the from 1974 to his death in 2016, Alan Young played Scrooge McDuck the whole time. From an album to Mickey's Christmas Carol to DuckTales to video games to movies to holiday specials, Alan Young was always Scrooge McDuck. Bless me, bagpipes. Except here. It's played by Will Ryan. You're going to hear an odd voice here. And this is also the time when they start trying. Donald Duck wasn't allowed to be in DuckTales because people were concerned. You can't understand him.
Yeah, like, why does he have a terrible speech impediment while all of his kids are, they speak fine?
Traditionally, Donald's nephew sounded exactly like him, and they were voiced by Clarence Nash in all the early cartoons. And you know, then, of course, the Donald Duck world blew up all over the globe in comic books. And where Donald has eloquent soliloquies that cannot be adapted given his current voice in cartoons.
So this is also where you first hear a new voice for Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
Russi Taylor, the voice of Minnie Mouse and a bunch of other Disney folks. She debuts the nephews, the nephews' voices. And I have a little clip of it, and this makes me very irritated. But I encourage you to listen to that episode of Laser Time. It's a much more thorough history of the Disney Afternoon. This has been something I've been looking for more information on for a while. Being able to talk to the creator of it, the writer of it, was super astounding for me. But there's an episode of Laser Time, lasertimepodcast.com, for more information on that and Darkwing Duck and DuckTales and all that stuff. But here's a little clip of not the right Scrooge, the first time with the new Russi Taylor's nephews, and a character I hope they never bring back.
Gentlemen, our honor is at stake. The time for victory is now. So get out there and fight and win back my trophy!
You don't care anything about sport, Goofy.
I should, if I didn't say that again,
none of us do.
He is referred to as Sport Goofy, not Sport Goofy. He's referred to as Sport Goofy the whole time. It is irritating and weird. And to show you how much strife, this came out in 87. I think it blew my mind a while back. They released a lot of the footage of the Roger Rabbit, which the internal Disney animators were making, and it was Paul Rubens. Eventually, they brought Spielberg and Robert Zemeckis on board, and they, of course, got every other cartoon character on board, and it became a much bigger, more important film. But Roger Rabbit debuts in Soccer Mania in his original form in the stands, and that's kind of the only time you officially saw him in motion. And it doesn't look anything like the Roger you know. But that's how long it had been being worked. Both of those projects were around in, like, 1983, 1982. I've talked too long about this. Okay.
To summarize, then, so this is kind of a pilot to DuckTales, but it's actually more like a misbegotten half-start that they sort of burn off.
I tried to get to the bottom of, as best I can tell, it was a popular European merchandise brand for, like, a year called Sport Goofy that they wanted to make a show about. I wanted to get to the bottom of who, but then who wanted to include Scrooge and his nephews? Because they had not been animated before ever except for an educational short about saving your money in 1967. They had never been together. It started before Mickey's Christmas Carol.
I mean, they just need cute kids in it? Is that it?
I don't know. I mean, I guess they're kind of ideal characters for that because they can actually solve shit and do stuff where, like, most of the main stable of, like, what do you want to call it, Disney vanilla universe can't really do
but
that.
But it's weird hearing them, just hearing that, knowing, like, now I consider the nephews, like, oh, they're a big part of the Disney universe, especially, like, the television animated universe. Why are they trying to get Sport Goofy over? Like, why are they trying to make him popular? It's like, it would be like if someone was like, well, what about Skateboarding Homer?
Why not just call him Goofy?
Yeah.
It's like everybody knows him as.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a pilot. It was an issuance to make something for Sport Goofy. It ended up having these characters in it. And people came and went from the project. And he said it became a testing ground for animators. Like, well, instead of, you didn't have a giant project, you worked a little more on this. So I think the final result, it looks like it was made by 7 different people throughout several years. But a lot of famous Disney animators worked on it.
That's really weird.
It is really weird. And I swear to Christ, this is the last time I'm going to talk about it. Because I solve the mystery as best I can. But it's all on YouTube if you want to see it. And I do not recommend it at all.
Okay.
That's it for TV. In games, I don't see anything listed.
Yeah, it's not a big week. You know?
Yeah. Let's just say a really cool arcade game. Yeah. So let's go out with some music. Can you believe it? U2 still number one, with or without you. But also out, John Hiatt, Bring the Family. And Living in a Box by Living in a Box. I don't know any of these.
I didn't know this song, but that I listened to Living in a Box by Living in a Box from the album.
Living in a Box? Oh, they big countryed it?
And it's, I mean, it's sort of like, oh, okay, yeah, it's a pretty good 80s pop song. I think they were bigger in the UK than they were in the US. And then when they hit the chorus, I'm just like, what is happening? Go out with that. We can enjoy.
Going out with Living in a Box. I can't remember the band name.
But you'll be living in a break after this.
See you in 1997. Like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
And like, this was when DuckTales was getting huge. They're like, boy, this Scrooge McDuck's a cool character. Oh, and they're stealing stories right out of comic books. Yep. Carl Barks did. So with Carl Barks not even getting like story by credit. Yep. On these TV shows.
Yeah, it's insane, because like trying to find a picture of Carl Barks, there's like two. Until like 1977, mm-hmm. when like, oh, this guy did the duck stuff?
The dorks, and like, as happens all the time, yeah. The dorks who grew up reading it, mm-hmm. like us, mm-hmm. 20 years later,
find him
and write stories about him. That's
write
what
stories about
say.
Him, invite him to comic cons, and people can take pictures with him, and he signs stuff, and he does
when I'm 50, I look forward to when they dig up the old podcasters and want to interview us about it.
Yeah, will you do a fucking promo for my Google screencast?
You want me to do an Alfred Chicken impression?
Honestly, they don't need to do that.
Alf was the style at the time.
Bimmy! That's a thing. Remember?
Everybody remembers me. Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again. Transitions like these. We went out with one of the most 80s songs I've never heard into one of the most 90s songs ever made.
That we've always heard.
Brace yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. It is M-Bop by Hanson. At number one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Debuting at number one?
Yeah.
The album came out a couple weeks ago. Someone actually commented on how we kind of just glossed over it, but
because I knew it was going to hit number one, so talk about it now.
We knew it was going to hit number one, but yeah. I met a few real diehard Hanson fans back in the day who were just
loved it back 3 weeks earlier when that.
No,
because I guess they have
like not unlike the Beatles. The Hanson were an overnight phenomenon for the world, but they were a working band for like 5 fucking years this. They put out many albums.
Man, wasn't the youngest one like 10?
They were mostly covers of like 56. Come on, baby, let's do the twist.
One of us is a psycho right now. Yes. Don't worry, we'll grow into it.
But they were an act for a long time. This is not their first album. This is not their first rodeo. It's just the first one that resonated with the audience. Good on hand, and they're still around and relatively scandal free. How did this happen?
Wow.
How did this happen? Every people who aren't scandal free, pretty much everybody involved with this fucking title. This is the title of the album, music from and inspired by the motion picture Batman and Robin. The movie is out in mid-June, but the album is out right now because that's the way things worked back in the day.
Yeah.
And this has the ultra pretentious double shot of Smashing Pumpkins. The end is the beginning is the end, and the beginning is the end is the beginning. Those are two songs on the soundtrack, which I would have loved to come in with. But maybe we'll close out. Maybe I'll win that argument. But it's also got Goo Goo Dolls, and is this R. Kelly's City of Justice, City of Crime?
I think a very specific song
about Gotham. It's absolutely incredible. Yeah. This album is insane.
They couldn't find enough songs to put in their movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand.
I hate the term inspired by. Like, someone's like, this this movie, so inspiring.
Right, it's like,
so
they showed them a rough cut, and they're like, I must write about like, this.
The creative juices must flow thanks to Batman and Robin.
Like, the, first of all, the movie's, not, the movie's not out yet, so you can't be inspired by it yet.
Yeah.
But, like, that... Like, 6 months after the movie came out, that someone called up Warner Brothers, listen, I watched Batman and Robin, love it, want to make a song for it. I know the movie's already out, but I want to make a song about it.
Exactly.
Can you help us out? Is this the one that has the infamous rhyming Riddler with the N-word? Or is that... No, was Riddler... No, he was the previous Batman movie, right?
And this, this to me is like if you've ever had satellite radio and you, like, listen to the 90s station and you realize there's... This isn't a genre. You can't sit here and listen to, ladies and gentlemen, we got Smashing Pumpkins followed by Bone Thugs and Harmony and coming in with a little R.E.M. and Jewel and the Goo Goo Dolls and Soul Coughing and Michelle and Deggy Ocello.
What?
It's like these are all on the Batman soundtrack. All of them, like Warner Brothers, I saw that neon hockey fight scene where Bane dies in 1 second. I had to write a jam called True to Myself. That's Eric Benet off the soundtrack.
And so many, like, I wouldn't call them independent musicians, but like... People I thought, like, I'm cooler than everyone else for listening to Smashing Pumpkins. Mm-hmm. No, I'm not. They're on the Batman and Robin soundtrack. They're just as big sellouts as fucking Hanson.
And Underworld. Like, you can't... It's impossible to be a fan of every one of these bands.
Yeah.
You might have no taste if that's the case for you. If that's the case, you're going to love this show.
Yes.
Because we're going to talk about everything, goddammit. But what else? So for movies this week, am I missing the news?
Well, there's also Demonic by Testament is out this week.
Oh, I wouldn't want to short shrift to Testament.
I don't know anything about them.
But no, there is news, Diana, right?
Yep.
The rebuilt Shakespeare's Globe Theater opens after burning down in 1613?
Yep.
Why
I thought it took them a long time to build in the World Trade Center area.
Yeah.
So.
Why the wait?
Blanking on his name. There's an American guy who...
Mark Rylance?
No, we're getting to him. But there's an American guy who just had this idea of, like, why, we know where the Globe Theater was. Why don't we just build a new one?
Mm.
And it took him a long-ass time. It was like 20, 30 years. But they finally did it. They built a new Globe Theater pretty close to where the old one was. And hopefully will not be... will not burn down because of sparks from a cannon from one of the Henry plays. Yeah,
what's
that's
Mark Rylance part.
Mark Rylance was the first artistic director of the new Globe Theater.
Oh, is he the guy who won the Academy Award for that movie
for Bridge of Spies?
The actor from Bridge of Spies.
Yeah.
Okay, see, that was confusing to me.
Right, 20 years ago.
The Big Fucking Giant. That's what the F stands for, right?
Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, he's been around a long time and is, you know, good stage actor and director. And it took him 20 years for any of us to notice. Apparently.
And speaking of movies, Lost World Jurassic Park is undeniably number one, as we all knew it would be. It's definitely not number one in our hearts, but not like this week's crop of movies is doing anything for anyone. I don't even know where to start here. Like, I've never, ever heard of... I saw this movie on video shelves, and it's just like, this is not for me. If your movie has Dylan McDermott on the cover, I'm not going to watch it. That's just it.
A romantic comedy about a destined love.
Why can't it just happen like it did with you and Mom?
Life's little detours.
What's happening?
You said I could bring some of my stuff over.
I meant like Q-tips, little personal cotton thing.
And the pitfalls of pushing fate.
Brought you a kitty.
Tell me you know everything about this, Diana.
Nope.
God damn it.
All I know is that kitty is dead.
I'm going to give you credit. You don't catch all the chick flicks?
I'm not a chick flick person. Yeah. I do not. Most romantic comedies don't do it for me. This looks fine. I mean, it stars Gene Triplehorn, who I really like.
But it's just sort of
better bit than that Gene Doublehorn.
But just an uneventful romantic comedy,
right? About like people. It's like, oh, they should totally be together, but
it's
like
so
wacky,
hard to be rich and fall in love.
Yeah, wacky circumstances keep them from meeting, I guess. And Sarah Jessica Parker's in there too.
Well, this
and
movie
maybe
needs,
Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah,
okay.
This movie needs to learn from last week and be based on a lyric from a song.
Exactly. You're not going to beat a dick to love.
Till There Was You as a song.
Is it?
Yep.
And. This is the movie, like, I'm intrigued to see through crooked fingers.
Yeah.
There is a very broad comedy out this week.
They're both pretty broad.
The trailer can explain it.
And also features someone from Must See TV.
Charlie Tuttle had the big office.
Hey!
The hot car.
Like this.
And the beautiful fiancé. But he also had a friend.
Is it too soon to kiss the bride? Yeah, I
We should wait. Named Richard.
It's your bachelor party! It's your party!
I can't do this.
Come on, Charlie. If it weren't for me, all you'd ever do is work.
One drink, one drink.
Okay, okay.
Now, while he's sleeping one off,
buddy,
the biggest trial of his life.
My career!
Help me, Ricky!
Is going on without him.
Mr. Tuttle.
Yes, sir. I'm ready to proceed.
Woo!
Yeah.
That is Michael Richards and Jeff Daniels.
So it's like Kindergarten Cop, but for a lawyer.
Yeah, like a lawyer gets too hungover at his bachelor party and he can't show up to court in that condition. And so Michael Richards, an actor, his character comes in and pretends to be his friend.
I can see both.
Trial
like,
and Error. Yes. That's a title that has never been used before. It's not being used right now on television.
This movie's all on YouTube.
Yeah.
Is it right there? And like,
101,000 views.
It is the most subdued I think I've ever seen Michael Richards.
Yeah.
But he's not that subdued.
He's still doing some pratfall stuff.
The movie is being sold as Kramer's a lawyer.
I am a big fan of UHF and Seinfeld. Yeah. Compared to both of those roles, this is Michael Richards at a four.
He's still a little kinetic. Like him in the lawyer chair, like dropping his papers.
Yes.
No, I recall actually seeing this. I don't know why.
I just want to...
But, I remember he does get pretty big and spansive.
I can already picture him busting through that little, like, waist-high fence thing in the courtroom, like Kramer style, like, hey!
Yeah. And then the whole jury applauds. Jesus, this movie, I totally forgot it even came out.
I wonder if, like, studios thought... Because, like, this and Till There Was You, like, they're both having a big Thursday night NBC star. People, 20 million people a week are watching Kramer.
Who?
20 million people.
Who would thought a broad comedy starring Kramer in 1997 would ever fail? Yeah. I'm surprised there aren't more.
Yeah.
He was making quite a bit of money on Seinfeld, so I guess there wasn't a lot of reason to. But the one I do remember, I believe I've even relayed that story a couple of times. Ooh, boy.
Got the boat?
Check.
Beer, gear, Dramamine?
Check, check, check.
We've gone fishing!
For Joe and Gus.
We go fishing!
Fishing is their life.
Hey, Joe!
Everything else is a detail. So with a 4-day vacation...
It's gonna be a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline 11!
Oh, Jesus.
What the hell is happening?
So, has anybody ever seen this?
No.
So, I haven't either, but a wonderful reunion between Joe Pesci and Danny Glover in the movie.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's true.
Gone Fishing. The next Lethal Weapon movie would come out a year later, and Joe Pesci would not star in a movie ever again. By his own choice. Like, he's retired until one of his friends asks him to do a cameo, and then he'll do it.
Or do a Snickers commercial.
About two guys who love fishing. I read in the trivia, there's not a fish caught in the entire film. It's mostly about the slapstick involved in trying to get there. Mm-hmm. But a personal anecdote, I don't know. This was all shot in my neck of the woods in Florida. Right. And my dad's job was the attorney at the Game and Freshwater Fish Commission. So when you... The interesting stories I can relay when Disney wants to build a railroad through a deer habitat. My dad comes down and like, that's not going to happen. But there was a boat stunt that went awry and fell into a crew of people and killed some folks.
Wow.
My God. This is the first thing I can remember.
10 years after all that stuff with Landis.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We talked about it on an episode of Laser Time about deaths that occurred on set. But this is, my dad had to investigate this. So I heard about this movie well before it ever came out or had a title, and it was pretty delayed, I think, as a result of...
Kind of, I mean, just like from hearing that name, Gone Fishing, I'm like, I knew it was the movie that was Joe Pesci and Danny Glover. Yeah. The 30 seconds of the clip that you played, every time you heard like a crash and a boom, it's like, there are some pretty big stunts in
there
this
are.
Movie. Like a giant... box falling on a camper,
it's
wheels falling off a car. It's like, do you have to be so action packed?
I remember seeing the poster and like, that looks so stupid. And I look at it now, but like, why the fuck not? Why not a big budget? And it cost $50 million.
I can see
this
film.
Yeah, went way over budget. $50 million for a lighthearted comedy about two fishing buddies. But if you can see clips from it, there's a shitload of stunt work.
Yeah.
it does suck to think about someone gave their life for the Danny Glover, Joe Pesci movie Gone Fishing.
And who thought this would make any money? Did it make any money?
I don't know. It seems like I didn't think the movie Without a Paddle would make money.
Yeah, but,
yet it did, and it's on TV constantly.
Danny Glover and Joe Pesci looking frumpy as hell with their sideways hats. I'm looking at the side video. It's just
this
so,
is,
and
remember,
again,
this is the wake of grumpy old men.
The entire movie is on YouTube. What does that mean? And this has way less views than the last one.
You know? Do you know what it has on Rotten Tomatoes?
What?
Four.
I haven't even made a movie yet, and I have a
high
Rotten
Tomatoes score. More like
Gone Fortune. But Jesus, it's a low point for movies right now.
And it ain't that much better for TV. There's only two things of note that I could really find to discuss. First, mate was May 29th, 1997, Murder One series finale, and this is just one of those crime procedurals that just seems to blend together in my head.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I could not pay attention to these things or follow any stories in the heat of the night Scarecrow, Mrs. King.
And if I'm going to watch a crime procedural in 1997, it's going to be Law & Order, or if Law & Order has a spinoff at this point, that. The more notable series finale this week was... June 1st, 1997, the series finale of Freakazoid.
Aww. I'd say it's a bummer, but
WB's really winding down at this point.
Yes. I think, I could go off and on. But we did talk about the Disney Afternoon earlier on, and because that helped usher in a different era of television animation that went beyond shit meant to hawk action figures at people and really, really garbage Hanna-Barbera reruns. The Disney Afternoon thing happened, and then Steven Spielberg got interested and really kicked things up a level. I didn't say it to the Darkwing Duck creator, but the reason why Darkwing Duck holds up so well is like the only the first Disney show pre-Aladdin to like break the fourth wall, get real gaggy and Chuck Jones, is because Spielberg saw what they did with DuckTales and like, I'm just going to bring Looney Tunes back. Brings back Tiny Toons and Animaniacs, and they hold up stupendously. Yeah. Really good. But they're also, we've talked about this on other shows, the idea that the Steven Spielberg and his partnership with Warner Brothers really helped kick up DuckTales and stuff like that got pushed out for things like Warner Brothers animation, like Batman the Animated Series and Animaniacs and Freakazoid to some extent. But that was really murdered eventually by Pokemon and Power Rangers.
I put Freakazoid's theme in there because I didn't watch much of it, but like that theme song
it.
Is like,
well, I
watch it at all, but I watch it now because it's awesome.
I think the thing that separates the Warner Brothers animated shows from Disney is I feel like there's a lot more for the grown-ups.
Oh, yeah.
And Freakazoid has just... Animaniacs and Freakazoid in particular have so, so many jokes that are just going right over kids' heads. Freakazoid, Freakazoid, underground
and underwear. Freakazoid. Yeah. Well, it's just... It is timelessly funny in a way that I think all cartoons should strive to be. And I think they got there with Steven Spielberg. And if I had to guess... the WB animated shows helped pioneer Fox's afternoon lineup. And then this happened to me. WB starts out. And overnight, we lost all of them. And I have to read about all the things that occurred. The Elmira and Pinky and the Brain Show, because I could not see those.
Yeah.
So I imagine these episodes, they look very expensive. They're scored by a giant orchestra.
Yeah.
And the audience, me, I have no access to these. So I have to imagine these shows are forced to move over to another network, cost more than, definitely more than acquiring Japanese footage of Super Sentai shows, and are seeing less viewers than ever before because they lost their audience, me.
And I have to say, unlike the other kids' WB shows, this is probably why I fell off. I cannot tell what this show is about through the theme because it's too frenetic. It's going all over the place. All I know is Freakazoid, Freakazoid.
There's baloney in their slacks.
Yeah, I'm mad at Maniacs. I knew what it was all about.
He's a superhero Bugs Bunny.
Yeah, but they got it. All it is him just doing like random shit, like playing drums on the heads of people. Now he looks like a cooked ham.
Yeah.
Like what?
It's amazing. What?
It's not as direct as like Animaniacs or Tiny Toons, where it's like, we are this and this is what we do.
Those shows were telling you, we're just creating these characters so we can indulge in any comedic situation we would like to, because these characters can go anywhere. And that's all Freakazoid was. But it was a little bit of a superhero bent, a great Charlton Heston parody, interstitial. I forgot what he's called, the Archer something, but just Heston.
Yeah, there were so many. I think if people are fans of The Tick, I think they'll find a lot to like because they went for a lot of the same sort of territory of making fun of superhero tropes, you know. And some of them were just the idea that, like, oh, one guy's evil plan was he built a watch that turned beavers into gold. And then Freakazoid just goes up to him and or like there's another time he builds a chairlift in a mountain, and if you go up into the mountain you turn into a sad clown. And Freakazoid defeats this guy by telling him, that is a really bad plan and you should be ashamed of yourself. You are not trying as hard as you should. You're not going to take over the world like this. And he's like, well, I'm sorry. I've just been working really hard lately. I'm really tired. And this is the best plan I came up with.
Speaking of sad clowns, Henry always points to this character, Fanboy.
Oh, God,
who was
yes.
basically an internet commenter personified circa 1997. Yeah. And embodied into one of the villains. And you're going to hear him say pretty much just what I said in the first segment of the show.
I sentence you to either 30 days in county jail or... 30 minutes listening to Fanboy.
Wow, Freakazoid, cool. Hey, I was just talking to Harlan on the internet, and I told him I hadn't seen a good cyberspace scene like this one since Tron, which is not the film that broke the bank at Disney in 1983, as some believe. No, Tron came out in 82, 3 years after Disney's The Black Hole, which was Movieland's equivalent to the Hindenburg. What a disaster! And the robots? They made R2-D2 look like Laurence Olivier.
Lock me up and throw away the key!
Yes. Yes, I could. I reflect. I get the irony in that. That's exactly what we sound like. Or me, specifically.
I understand. I think a high point, too, is Fanboy does get to meet Mark Hamill.
Like, voiced by Mark Hamill, I would imagine.
Yeah. Tortures him. I mean, will not leave him alone at a fan convention.
And I'll only say the finale, we say, aw, but I'm pretty sure they probably manufactured the show with a... expiration date.
Well, I think they obviously they knew it coming because they have like a finale. Yeah. Everyone gets together and sings We'll Meet Again. But yeah, it really does hold up really well. Mm-hmm. I got a bunch of it on DVD.
Yeah, I really love it. Never saw it when it aired. I saw it when it was rerun on Cartoon Network at like 1 a.m. and loved the show. I love the show. Yep. I definitely, if now that I know there's DVDs, I'll totally pick those up.
Oh man. So many just little jokes. I was like, we stopped this for a special announcement.
It's
I love you. Back to the show.
It created the exact same scenario for me in hindsight. Disney versus Warner Brothers. Disney is big on craft and very gorgeous looking fluid animation, and Warner Brothers will always be funnier.
Yeah.
Always be funnier, and they were and they still are. And it bums me out to no end thinking that these shows don't air many places, because there, of course, there's some specific references, but there weren't fucking Looney Tunes, and they showed that for like three generations, talking to Humphrey Bogart like as if I know who that is when I'm seven. I'm just enjoying this cartoon. But I really love the Warner Brothers output, and this to me, I know there was some stuff after this with Spielberg, the hysteria and whatnot, but this is Freakazoid to me is the, I don't want to say the pinnacle, but sort of the end, for all of that.
Something that probably doesn't hold up as much is the big game release of this week, Hexen, which came out on Nintendo 64.
I'm not a wealthy person. I picked up a bundle of N64 games. Mm-hmm. I never put this in. I don't know what this looks like.
I mean, it was just, at this point, I feel like, did we have GoldenEye? So it was like,
GoldenEye's this year.
I think we're coming up on GoldenEye.
Okay. But it is one of those early instances of like, Turok, I think, was out. But it's like, you're starting to discover, okay, yes, first-person shooters actually work well on the N64, and since the N64 has four controller ports, you can play four-player single-screen play, and that's pretty neat, but, you know, you can't ever go back to a game like this.
Yeah.
And it just, I think, got lost in the wave of, like, well, Turok's got dinosaurs, South Park's got South Park characters. GoldenEye's
got farting.
Key on snowballs.
GoldenEye's got Bond villains. What's Hexen got? Just demons and stuff.
A difficult to pronounce name.
Yeah, and I think it had been out on the PC since the end of 1995. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't really even a fresh name at this point. It was one of those things where I'd seen it in video game magazines a ton of times already. So I wasn't even like, this wasn't on my radar when it came out. I was still playing Overblood.
Built in the Doom engine, published by id, developed by Raven
Software. Oh, of course it was id, because it is a first-person shooter that is four or five letters long. Doom, Hexen, Quake.
Rage.
Yeah.
Yep. But that does it for games at this point? Wow. Yeah. We should go out with the We'll Meet Again Freakazoid. So, this is... I don't know if they had an end date in mind, but it was nice that they I think they foresaw one probably when they started production of the series, and you can always bring a show like this back.
Yeah.
It's not difficult, and you should consider it. Warner Brothers, I'd buy something. Please don't make it a pop figure. But when you come back, we will dive headlong into 2007. This is We'll Meet Again from the last episode of Freakazoid. I was singing this song. Everybody! We'll meet again. Going nowhere. Going nowhere. But I know we'll meet again. Some sunny
Mr. and Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea, it's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's anything worth a watching. And this week, May 26th to June 1st, oh boy, there's a bunch of things we can talk about. Let's start 75 years ago this week, May 29th, 1942, Yankee Doodle Dandy was released with James Cagney. This is an interesting movie, though, because it's a patriotic movie, obviously, but then they were filming it when Pearl Harbor started, so they had to go back and put in current stuff about FDR. And I mean, James Cagney, besides being a great actor when it comes to like gangster stuff, he was a song and dance man. And you want something weird, there's a song and dance number where he plays FDR singing and dancing and jumping up on tables and tap dancing, and you're like, nobody told anybody, man, FDR had fucking polio. Like, they knew, but they thought, oh sure, he can sing and dance, whatever. But it's a good movie. It's a lot of fun. Anyway, 50 years ago this week, May 27, 1967, Australians vote to count Aborigines in their census, giving Aborigine citizenship. With sort of a backdoor trick there. Good job, guys, you're counting the people that were already there. Anyway, unfortunately, May 30th, 1967, one of my favorite actors, Claude Rains, passed away. He was 77. But the good news... two albums came out this day, June 1st, 1967, is David Bowie's debut album, which is not the Bowie that you're used to hearing. It's described as quaint and old-timey. So I guess, you know, he still had to get into drugs or something to turn him awesome. But the big news, if I may, it was 50 years ago today, Sgt. Pepper was released, okay? And that's all the singing I'm doing. Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band is released on the list of Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Albums. This is number one. There is a reason for this. I know I've been hearing all about it on the news and stuff because this is a big deal. Why is this a big deal? Because they did crazy production shit. That's why. Used to be a band, they sing into a microphone, you put it on an album, it goes out. This, they're experimenting, they're doing weird stuff. It's a concept album about like a music hall band, and some of the songs are very old-timey. They're doing so much weird production stuff, though, that it kind of blew everybody's minds. So, obviously, this week I gotta recommend you have to listen to Sgt. Pepper's. You're supposed to listen to it from start to finish. I know that some of it kind of drags. I'm looking at you, Within You, Without You, with your long freaking sitar raga stuff. But even though that feels long, it's only 5 minutes. The whole album is like 40 minutes long. Just focus on, like, what's going on musically. Like, the awesome bass line in Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Just let it wash over you, man. And if you don't want to, because you've heard the album a million times like I have, one more time, I will pimp the Princess Leia's Stolen Death Star plans, because I cannot tell you how much I appreciate that Palette Swap Ninja went back and tried to recreate these sounds. And if you try to imagine, how do you do that? Like, plug your guitar into a computer, and then how do you recreate some of this? It blows my mind. I love it so much. And that's it for this week. Stay classic.
Coming in with By You, capital A Drank, Shouty Snappin' by T'Pain, featuring Young Juke. is number one.
Young you Josh. Literally cannot be a white person and say that title.
Yeah, yeah. Buy You a Drink, Shouty Snappin', some good drink. Also out this week, These Things Move in Threes by Mumra, Relentless, debut of the debut by Jason Aldean, and Double Up by R. Kelly, which I can only imagine means two streams of pee. what? We're in 2007, people. You got what was it now? May 25th through June 1st. The news. June 1st, Jack Kevorkian is released from prison after 8 years in helping a guy kill himself.
Yep. This is the one he basically dared the cops to come for him. He filmed it.
Yes.
Gave the film to 60 Minutes.
To make a national conversation out of something you thought was very necessary.
Yeah. Well, and also up until then, he basically built a machine where people could end their own lives, and they pressed the button.
They have to press the button.
This guy had ALS and was in such an extreme position that Kevorkian himself did it.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, they had a pretty quick trial where he represented himself, which is never a good idea.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he got something like 20 years, but he got out in 8, I think, because he was already
about to
sick.
Die.
He was sick himself.
Life was assisting his own suicide.
Yeah.
And Diana put this in. I don't even know what it is.
Oh, no, I put this
they
in.
They put this
so
in.
So on May 31st, 2007, a local news channel aired an interview at the Rose Festival in Portland, Oregon, where a boy had a very important thing to say.
Oh, I hope this is what I think it is.
Back here live at the Waterfront Village with my friend, the zombie, Jonathan. You're looking good. Jonathan just got an awesome face paint job. What do you think?
I like turtles.
All right, you're great, zombie. Good time.
I didn't think it could still work.
Yeah.
So
he's
good.
A fucking
this kid likes turtles. Ugh.
And bless the newscaster there for not completely corpsing.
Oh,
she's
God.
Approached. All right, moving on.
Oh my God.
But just like how there are so many different things to like process here. So it's the Rose Festival. So
yeah.
I guess it's to celebrate roses.
Yeah, Rose City, Portland, Oregon.
Boy with zombie makeup. Yeah. I guess there was some booth where you get painted up as a zombie.
We saw Land of the Dead.
Yeah,
people start remembering
right
things.
On the right on the cusp of the zombie craze here. Mm-hmm. And he likes turtles.
He likes turtles. Who doesn't like turtles?
But that's the number one thing he has to tell us. The most important thing. It's not like, I like your face paint. Thank you. I'm a zombie.
Or pretending to be a zombie.
I swear I saw an interview with this kid on either Tosh.0 or elsewhere.
Dude, he's got to be like, in his probably like late teens, early 20s at this point?
Yeah.
And he made it sound like he wasn't doing something intentionally. That was just the first thing that came to his head. But he's also young, so let's give him a break. It's still an amazing clip.
Yeah.
Jesus, I hate to move into the movies from that. It's too beautiful. But Pirates of the Caribbean 3, the World's End movie, not the one with Seth Rogen. We'll talk about him in a second. Is number one, of course. Mm-hmm. But you know what is not number one? A movie called Gracie with, once again, Dermot Mulroney.
So this week he's in 97 and 2007. Last week he was in
87.
Wow.
Three-decade sweep. But he might only work once every 10 years.
Can you say the same of Dylan McDermott? I don't know.
I don't know the difference.
I still can't tell my part.
Was there a difference? Did we talk about the other one?
No.
I don't remember.
I don't think we've talked about him for a while. But speaking of people with similar names, also in this movie are both Andrew and Elizabeth Shue.
And they're not the same.
They are.
Oh, the Melrose Place guy?
Yes. And the Back to the Future girl, who are siblings.
Adventures
IRL.
In Babysitting Girl, please. Please.
You could be both.
Nuts to leaving Las Vegas.
But I guess it's like a weird part where their fame kind of like coincided. Because like she was big in the 80s. Took a little bit of a dip, but then like shot back up in the mid to late 90s. Andrew Shue just kind of like showed up in the mid 90s, like plateaued, and then fell off.
Yes.
So at that one point, their fame was at the same level, and this is that movie.
I've never lost my love for Elizabeth Shue.
Yes.
I always thought she was the most beautiful lady I'd ever seen when I was a little boy, and I saw her recently, and it was... She looks exactly the same.
She looks great.
God damn it. Yes, she was a big crush for me, Adventures in Babysitting. But also, Mr. Brooks.
Which I couldn't tell looking at that at the list of actors. Like, is this a comedy or what?
Well,
it's not.
It's so odd to think about it because Kevin Costner has been bizarrely one of the most resilient, real-deal movie stars over the last couple of years. And this is his fucking comeback where I'm like, because he does not have a lot of range as an actor, and I love the man, but he wanted to play against type, so he plays a serial killer. It's one of the first times Kevin Costner will play the bad guy.
Ah.
No heart of gold here.
Nope.
Heart of hate. And no one saw it. But it somehow has Dane Cook in it.
Yeah, Jesus, I think he's like the apprentice or something to Kevin Costner. So it's also Dane Cook going against type, I think.
Yeah. No, I mean, I watched the trailer. The trailer didn't have any like good parts to pull out to enjoy for everyone. But it seems that Kevin Costner is secretly a serial killer. Possibly William Hurt encourages him to do this. Mm-hmm. Demi Moore is the investigator after him. And Dane Cook, I think, witnessed the murder and is now blackmailing him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so there's a bit of cat and mouse.
Follow the trail of destroyed bathrooms, because that's all I'll ever associate Kevin Costner with again. A dumb scene in, oh my God, Hidden Figures, that's the one. But this is the movie that I really liked and I think holds up a lot better than most people ever want to give it credit for. The starring debut of a man I previously mentioned.
Hello.
Hi, this is Allison. I don't know if you remember me.
I have something I really need to tell you. I'm pregnant.
With a baby?
Yes.
Then what are you hitting on me for?
How did this happen?
This is a disaster.
Aren't you supposed to be married to have a baby?
You should be, because they love each other, and people who love each other get married and have babies.
Do you love each other?
Oh. I still think this movie
is
great.
That's the
question. What? You're getting jumping in with a Henry criticism. These movies are too long and indulgent and improv-y. It's a flavor.
It's weird that the hero of the movie is like such an aimless, shiftless person. Like,
didn't make you aspire to landing a really drunk hot girl that you tether yourself to for the rest of your life purely by not wearing a pleasureless condom.
Yeah, and but like all the most noble thing he does in the movie is get like a job that he doesn't really want.
Yeah, I know, but it is written from the perspective of that person.
Yeah, Judd Apatow is basically his follow-up to 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Because
that was like 2004.
Yeah, apparently it was supposed to star that whole team of Circuit City employees.
I think they got... Oh, okay. But they got like 75% of like the same cast.
It was Carell not returning that made them turn it into different... But it was supposed to be like a direct sequel.
Oh.
Because
this was kind of a prequel to This Is 40.
This Is 40. It's a direct prequel.
Yeah, because it's the same... The Paul Rudd and Leslie Mann characters.
It was bizarre. In a fucking director who's famous for his cameos, he couldn't have cameos from Seth Rogen and Katherine Heigl from Knocked Up. This Catherine Heigl took a ton of issues with the movie, which I'm sure tie in with your issues.
Also, that's what I can get
it
into.
It kind of justified that. Yeah, it's two leads.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Rogan's funny. Like, he's with he shares a house in California with a bunch of his friends, and they're funny. And Paul Rudd and Amy Mann are funny enough to get their own movie.
And their children are funny.
The female co-lead, not fun.
Well, yeah, I I never thought I'd do this. I have Katherine Heigl's back on this one. That her complaint was that the female characters are shrill one-note harpies. Mm-hmm. And that's part of my problem with this movie, not just as an SJW thing. It's just that's a trope I'm really sick of. There's so many... It seems like so many like romantic comedies where that's all about like the guy who's freewheeling and fun and the girl is uptight and works really hard and she should stop doing that.
Absolutely reduced to boring straight woman status. But
get a good job.
The complaint
don't do that.
I don't think the complaint of every woman being that is apt for this movie, because Kristen Wiig has a fucking fantastic cameo. Leslie Mann is hilarious in it. The children are hilarious.
Leslie Mann is also kind of a scold, though.
Charlene Yee is hilarious.
Yeah. Okay, Charlene Yee is funny. I like her.
I love that whole situation, because if you were a Freaks and Geek fan, like the idea that Seth Rogen was popping up in a movie called 40-Year-Old Virgin was amazing, and let alone this pseudo reunion where everybody's name is their actual name.
And this movie, it started to convince me that Martin Starr could do other, like, because I always just pictured him as Bill Haverchuck. You cannot be anything but that geek. But then he's a stoner in this, and he's still a stoner now in Silicon Valley.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wow, okay, you found another element of your acting that you could put into a role. I thought you were like, oh no, you're only the biggest dork in the planet.
But I don't mean to say your criticism isn't apt. Mm-hmm. It's just like, this is, to me, is a very authentic depiction of people at the age I was when I saw the film.
Yeah, and that's why I can't just be like, fuck this movie. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot that I like about it. There's a lot that does feel very lived in and real and authentic.
Yeah.
And then there's just some stuff, I'm just sick of seeing this, because, I mean, what's the flip side version about a guy who works really hard and a girl who wants to be free and have fun? This manic pixie dream girl bullshit where it's still like she's still the one that we're supposed to be like, oh, she's so kooky and adorable and yeah, dude, lighten up, whatever. I hate the idea of like, let's punish women for being competent.
Yeah, well, I think she has to react that way in order for the man babies to be able to behave the way they do. And those are my takeaways from the funniest thing I think about the movie is seeing it and they start describing, so here's our fucking idiot mid-20s idea is to create a website to see all the nude scenes from movies. And as an audience member, I'm like, it's Mr. Skin, asshole.
Right.
And that's a resolution in the fucking movie. Like, there's a thing called Mr. Skin that's this giant plug for a website that shouldn't exist.
Yeah, I was wondering. It's like, wait, in this universe, is this Mr. Skin going to exist?
Yes.
Or is this going to go somewhere else?
So I love all that was so funny to me that they're working so hard on this thing that they didn't bother to check that it already exists.
They're not working hard. It's like, they spend two minutes every, like, half hour, like, oh, let's watch this movie with boobs in it.
I don't know. I love the camaraderie of those guys.
I like all that stuff. I just wish people would try just that little extra bit to flesh out the naggy female character.
I think there's a bit of redemption in funny people.
There's a couple good scenes. I love her about to vomit while talking to James Franco about Spider-Man 3, which is like, that's perfect. Yeah. It's like they knew it was going to suck before it came out.
And Alan Tudyk and Kristen Wiig as the executives. Like,
we're not saying you should lose weight, but if you could...
Tiger.
Yeah, and R.I.P. Harold Ramis as Seth Rogen's dad. That's great casting.
I don't know, just a lot of great people involved in this film. And I don't know, I think it still has a great laugh per minute ratio.
Yeah.
The scene from the trailer that they cut down because it's a goddamn trailer, I do like her breaking... I do like Katherine Heigl's character breaking to Seth Rogen that she's pregnant after their one-night fling.
Yeah.
And again, it's a one-night stand that turns into...
Yeah.
I think we're confirmed it is a relationship that exists in This Is 40, the weirdest sequel ever made.
Yeah.
But here's the scene of Katherine Heigl breaking to Seth Rogen.
So I have something I really need to tell you. It's kind of why I called you. Here it goes. I'm pregnant.
Fuck off.
What? I'm pregnant?
With emotion?
With a baby. You're the father.
I'm the father?
Yes.
How the fuck did this happen?
I don't know. I mean, I thought you were wearing a condom.
No.
What?
I wasn't.
Why not?
Because you told me not to.
What are you talking about?
What am I talking about? You told me not to.
I did not tell you not to wear a condom.
Here's what happened, okay? I will give you a play-by-play of my memory. I almost had the condom on my dick. It was on the cusp. And then you said, just do it already.
I didn't mean do it without a condom. I meant do it, like, hurry up, like, get fucking going.
Well, I assumed you're wearing a patch or, like, a dental dam or one of those fucking butterfly clips or something. It's like saran wrap. It's disgusting, okay? But I thought you had one. Why the fuck didn't you stop me once we started?
I don't know. I couldn't tell that you didn't have one on. I was drunk.
Was your vagina drunk? Do you think it's the thinnest condom on earth I have on? I'm a fucking inventor. I'm in a dick skin condom. He hollowed out a penis and put it on. What the fuck?
I don't know. I love all that. You can clearly tell it's a lot of it's off the spot.
Yeah.
And that's a very iffy thing. Like, that's like a... People do that. Like, people... That's like a shitty thing that people do. Like...
Yeah.
Initiate sex, take off the condom. There's a name for it.
Ghost safety.
But it's a shitty thing to do, and it can lead to things
just
like this.
Get there.
But
no,
it's not happening anymore. Obviously,
but it's
that's not just for you. That's for the listeners.
No,
no.
I'll say too.
But that it's like it can make. That it didn't become a thing like that. Mm-hmm. Like that's a problematic thing that like you could slam the movie for, but it's look, there's humor coming out of it, and they obviously get to a good place together. So you know,
they were both so goddamn drunk that they were not thinking in their right minds.
Right after a great Munich conversation about Munich.
I
still think the movie's really fun.
Yeah,
but
you paused that clip, and it is that's why Katherine Heigl like had a problem with the movie because she's always just like. I can't believe you.
Just fucking bitch face.
If you go through like the behind the scenes and see all the actors they pitched it to and how many people said no, right? Because they needed someone like realistically who Seth Rogen could fuck. Because even this looks like he's 10 to 20 years younger than she is. Or maybe that's just his performance.
Yeah.
But I think if there was an improviser or somebody who was more comedic in there, she's a great actress. I think maybe the role would have taken different shape. Instead, she has to react negatively to things because that's kind of what she does.
Well, I mean, someone's got to be the straight person.
Yeah, someone's got to be the straight person.
This does have a fun extra. I think it's on the DVD of other people, quote unquote, auditioning for it.
The Sarah one.
The Michael Cera is good. And what's the other one?
Is Aziz Ansari doing it?
Yeah. Mm. Who am I thinking of? It does ends up doing as a Vincent Price impression.
Bill Hader. Yeah.
Yeah, Bill Hader, and they can, you know, there is no Bill Hader. There are only impressions.
No, he's in the movie. He does a Jabba the Hutt impression on screen. Sorry, he didn't pick that. That didn't pick up on Mike. That's Knocked Up, people. I really still dig it. But it's Seth Rogen's first starring role. Seth Rogen as a movie star is 10 years old, and it doesn't seem to show any sign of stopping. Not good even when an entire government comes after him. But getting into TV.
Speaking of funny ladies, May 29th, 2007, it was the season one finale of The Big Gay Sketch Show, which was a sketch show that aired on Logo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the cast was primarily gay and lesbian comedians. Mm-hmm. But it was notable because it featured future SNL standout star, probably the rock of SNL right now, Kate McKinnon.
The MVP, Kate McKinnon.
Yeah. It's just weird to see Kate McKinnon 10 years ago. Like, her hair's a little bit shorter.
Even more beautiful. Mm-hmm. I like Kate McKinnon.
Just as inaccessible to you. So give it up.
It's good.
But we're going to get into a lot of reality shows. Like I said last week, especially 2007, the scripted shows are done. Reality shows come out to play. On CBS, The Next Big Thing, Who Is the Greatest Celebrity Impersonator, airs.
Oh my god, you can't come up with a better title?
No.
What a garbage title.
So the winner was an Elvis impersonator, second place finisher was a Frank Sinatra impersonator.
First place, Jay Farrow.
And the third place finisher was another Elvis impersonator.
Jeez.
Also, this week, May 31st, Mark Burnett, there he is again, debuts the show Pirate Master on NBC. So
people love these pirate movies. Let's put some pirates on the TV.
Yeah, so he had a lot of success with Survivor and some success with The Apprentice, but then he started to roll out a bunch of other stuff. I talked about that that movie over on the lot last week.
Yeah.
This week is Pirate Master, which is, I'm surprised I didn't watch this because I like Survivor. And this is basically people being stranded, except this time they're on a ship and not an island. And the credits look very Survivor-y, but it's just stupid because it's people cosplaying as pirates.
Oh, no.
And getting treasure every week is the reward. I have a clip of it, and it's really...
Yeah, it's terrible.
I can actually see why I didn't watch it because it's just so dumb.
Welcome to my pirate ship. This is really a step back in history, where 16 lucky Americans get to live as pirates.
Arr.
Fuck off. That's it. No more of it.
Gross.
No, so do they live as pirates? They capture container ships off of Somalia's coast?
That's as much research as I care to do. All I know is it didn't make it.
You need to take this dysentery pill.
It didn't actually finish its run. I think they finished it on
NBC. Please tell me they're still out there on the sea somewhere.
No, yeah. No, they finished it on NBC.com.
Sorry, Mackenzie, you got scurvy.
Yes.
You're going to have to leave. We'll be taking some of your teeth first.
Yeah.
Please hand us your bill, Dredd.
And moving on to reality television that's intentionally funny, this week was the last punked episode to feature Ashton Kutcher as the host. So the show basically...
This isn't just being punked again. You're not going to fucking tell me next week he's back.
The show ended for about, I think, 4 or 5 years, and they brought it back with a rotating celebrity guest host structure.
It was really entertaining. He canceled the show only to announce... Well, we had to say it was canceled so we could keep... punking people. And it was a surprise announcement. There's a brand new season.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be able to get one over my friends if they knew this was still in production.
Yeah. But yeah. And then I think it was recently revived on BET a year or two ago.
Damn,
but
right, it was.
The last episode featuring Ashton Kutcher as our host, the pranks this week, just to give you an idea of what celebrities were in 2007. And I don't actually know two out of three of these people. Allison Michaela and her sister AJ are blamed for harming a bear by feeding it chocolate, which was given to them by a photographer. I don't know who they are.
What?
Kerr Smith and his wife are at an antique store trying out a waterbed that breaks, leading to a slip and fall that breaks a table. What? I think that's an NBA star.
This sounds like 1,000 years old now. These sound like one real Nickelodeon films.
And then John Cena and his driver run through a stop sign and collide with a funeral procession, causing the casket to fall out of the hearse and outraging the dead man's brother. The punks themselves got way more convoluted and multi steps. Whereas, I think the beginning was just hey, we...
The beginning was it was easier, but then, if you think about how elaborate it got, we have to put cameras in a car and somehow explain to this person, your friend who's driving is not driving his car, and you don't know where you're going, and you don't... I don't know. Punked, baby.
Yeah.
I did like that in that some of the pranks border on mean, but because they're two rich, beautiful people, you don't have to feel bad.
Yeah.
Nah.
It was great. I think there was an episode that almost made Justin Timberlake cry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And before Punk'd was a celebrity prank show, it was just going to be Ashton Kutcher doing pranks on normal people. And I think some people got really upset. And it's because he's a fucking rich guy pranking normal people. That sucks.
Oh, no. They were subject of a huge lawsuit.
Yeah.
It involved a dead corpse that's discovering a dead corpse in a hotel room.
Yeah.
Posed on civilians.
Yeah.
Where it wasn't
hilarious,
funny.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it is kind of funny, actually. Is that it for TV?
Yep.
That it for TV? We go into games. This is really embarrassing. Mario Party 8, the last one I played. Not only did I play it, I reviewed it. Gave it an 8.
Wow.
And because I was an ambitious young man trying my best to get a job at a games review factory, I wrote a guide to Mario Party. The most superfluous and unnecessary thing to Mario Party. But with genuine tips I could find on
Pro
how
tip,
to
play till the end. You'll probably get stars for something you didn't even know you were going to.
Exactly. You can be the best person in the world at Mario Party. You're still going to get blue shelled at the end.
Yeah.
Because the point of it is practically Vegas rules.
Yeah.
Except one of you gets to play the house and no one knows who it is. But Mario Party came out. It's
who has the brightest shoes? They get 5 stars. They win.
Wait, what was that?
There's a weird little thread between the two big releases of this week.
Mm-hmm.
So Mario Party had to be recalled when it released in Europe because some of the copies have the word spastic amongst the dialogue.
Oh, that's right.
And that's a pretty
mental games.
Yeah, it's a pretty big slur in the UK.
I see.
I apologize.
Shag your friends.
I think it used to be a slur in the US and we just sort of got away from it.
Yeah,
we went opposite of the R word.
Yeah. it used to be someone who has seizures, you know. I think that was an actual diagnosis.
And I guess since everybody knows the appropriate shorthand for that, spastic doesn't have the same pejorative meaning anymore.
I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe it's better spasm medication.
Yeah.
Who knows?
But there was also a recall. Well, not a recall, but it was a delay kind of with the same reasoning for the other big release of this week. Halo 2 for Windows Vista. And that is the actual name of the game. Halo 2 for Windows Vista came out on June 1st. 2007.
Right after the Halo 3 beta.
Yeah, but this is the first... I can't remember if the original... I think the original Halo did come out on the PC as well.
It did, but it wasn't online.
Yeah, and Halo 2 is that kind of... that made online gaming on the original Xbox a big thing.
It made worth paying $60 a year for access to online.
And this was trying to do the same for Windows Vista, which had not caught on. Games for Windows Live, which has never caught on.
It's gone.
But people actually discovered that you could mod the game so it would play on Windows, whatever it was before this.
We had to mod Halo XP. 1 on PC to play it online, and it was hard and broken and bad, but we wanted to do it. Had to try.
So the Windows port added 2 exclusive multiplayer maps, as well as a map editor way before you could do that on consoles.
Forge?
Yeah. So it was originally supposed to release a month ago, May 8th. But it got pushed back to the next month because there was partial nudity on one of the game's maps. In the game's map editor, a photograph of a man mooning the camera was presented as part of the dot ass error message. I have no idea what that means, but I guess if you screwed up with the map
dot
editor,
ass.
You'd see a man's butt.
Oh my God. Please tell me that URL is available.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Halo 2 for Windows Vista
and
dot
again,
ass.
Saying something about all of America. Headshot your friends to death, but no butts.
Yeah.
No
butts. Stuff.
And also this week, as also part of the Games for Windows Live launching, was Shadowrun,
which was they could play a PC versus Xbox.
You could for a while. Now you can't at all because it's probably been shut down. But it's like, was this a first person shooter with flight or?
It was a first Halo with mostly superpowers.
Okay, yeah. Never really got into this one.
It was very weird, and I... Because it was also... an article a long time ago where I was visiting barren multiplayer servers and watching what happened to the world, and Shadowrun was fascinating because it had so many weird rules, like grow a tree, stand next to it to gain health, and like a bunch of weird shit, like... The servers had delved into chaos between like the 12 people still playing, and like there were no rules. Everybody
like Lord of the Flies.
It was nuts. Wow. We went in there and like they're like, "Who the fuck is this guy? What are you doing here? Get out of my servers,
intruder, intruder!"
It was exactly like that. It was fucking creepy. But
Outlander
totally happened.
This was also like a revival. I think wasn't there like Shadowrun on like Genesis or something? I feel like it was a franchise.
It's based on a popular board game series. And I think Microsoft acquired that company. And there's another Shadowrun game now.
Oh, really?
That I think was a little more well received. That is it for video games. We are winding down the 302010. We're getting to the point where we read your comments, and I'm going to start out with Solomon Mars, who said, "I had a lot to say about The Fifth Element and how I like everything about it except the ending, and how I discovered every woman I met who liked the movie loved the opera singing scene. But I just feel like I'm typing into nothingness. No one reads these, cares, or that my comments add any." Are you okay, Solomon Mars?
No.
Have any significant impact?
Hey, they do. We just read it.
They do. And
we're listening.
We are announcing something at this very moment that the comments are so fun and so special and so uproariously laugh-worthy. Mm-hmm. If it hasn't been said before, we are charged by the bandwidth, the size of the show. It's more expensive to host a bigger show, so what we wanted to do is do a Patreon-exclusive show just for 302010 listeners where at the... Five included with your $5 a month, another bonus show every week, commentaries, and we're going to do every 2 weeks an exclusive show where you just read your feedback and talk about that, because I think that's worthwhile to do. But this is literally costing us hundreds of dollars at this point because of how long the show is. I would love to, so we want to do this more, and we're going to try and make that happen for you. So patreon.com/lasertime. It does have an impact. Solomon Mars, you goofy bastard. Jesus.
Actually, speaking of...
So dejected.
Don't call him spastic. Actually, now the more I think about it, I think spastic might mean cerebral palsy. Which is like,
that's
even meaner. Because you're born with that. And I have friends with that, and that's mean. Also, I should mention with The Fifth Element, like right after we recorded the show, I saw a great video about a trope that like I hadn't really thought of as a trope before. Of child's brain, sexy body in science fiction. So like Tron Legacy and Fifth Element and you know, Sheena and all kinds of other stuff.
No, that's not it.
It's like what would happen if Victor Frankenstein made a lady instead? It'd be hot as shit and dumb.
Yeah, well, the idea is she's really, really sexy, but she's also super innocent, and then she falls for the guy character, and it's the only guy that she knows, so this is like just a weird fantasy about being able to fuck someone who's who's like never been fucked before, but she's really sexy, but she's also not gonna leave you.
That's why the pros always approach the girl first. Come on, guys. The more people she meets, the more deluded you become.
Like that Freaks and Geeks episode where the nerds meet that one girl and they show her around, but they know she's going to be popular. Gotta let her go. Gotta let Leela go.
Yeah, it's a weird trope. I hadn't really thought of it.
Yeah.
But I hope you're not depressed, Diana, because you gotta go into deaths.
Yeah, I gotta go into deaths.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, not a good week for deaths. Jeff Buckley.
Or a great week for deaths.
That's sad. He was only 30.
Was he the one who just walked in the water?
Yeah.
And just never he walked into a river.
Yeah,
didn't leave a note. Jeff Buckley, a musician.
Yeah, really, really good singer. And then when I don't know how I didn't even hear this story. She actually dies 3 weeks from now, but I should mention Malcolm X's widow, Betty Shabazz, died from burns sustained after her apartment was set fire by her 12-year-old grandson.
Oh my god!
By accident, I would presume.
Well,
No,
it's not entirely clear. The kid had some problems. It's a strange story, but she was only 63. I didn't realize she was that young.
6 more years, she could have been the weed number.
That's true.
That's too bad. You ready to do some birthdays, D?
Yes!
Oh, wait, we got to do our plugs real fast. Again, we're going to make a 302010 spinoff for you listeners out there just to incorporate more of your feedback. It's really fun. We're going to try and make it special. So check it out, patreon.com/lasertime. There's also a weekly bonus show there every single week. We recently did a cartoon commentary over the 2-part Darkwing Duck pilot. We've done stuff with Spider-Man and Danger Mouse drinking game. All the stuff YouTube wouldn't allow us to post. Sunk up, so you don't have to do any of that. No syncing required. Also, check out Talking Simpsons if you're a fan of that. And everything at lasertimepodcast.com.
And yeah, that's also the home of Laser Time Podcast itself, which in recent weeks we've done You're Into Sport Goofy. As you mentioned before, there's that entire episode about Disney Afternoon. Mm-hmm. We just recently did an episode about evolving TV show themes where we pit shows that have multiple themes. We pit all those themes against each other to determine which one's the best. A lot of great stuff there, as well as Mr. Goodman's show.
My old man's got a show.
Diana's superior half. No one ever says that.
Shut up. I like my old man. I'm bringing that one back. My old man, has a show entirely about video games, Video Game Apocalypse, and there's also Talking Simpsons.
We talked about Austin Powers' anniversary, we streamed the game, and then Dave pitched the top five worst Mike Myers games.
User on our site, Semi Fracky, who pointed out that there are more than five Mike Myers games that star Mike Myers, which astonished me.
And we made some video accompaniment that's on youtube.com/lasertime if you want to see what all these games look like in motion juxtaposed with our conversation. It's ridiculous.
It was great. There's also Talking Simpsons, a chronological look at The Simpsons. And
you're going to be on one, I think. Yeah, Lisa Malibu Stacy.
Hells yeah, my favorite episode ever, period. And I'm also on Twitter at ListenANerd if you want to talk classic-y movie stuff. So that brings us to the last thing, the birthday quiz.
Oh, birthday is a doodly-doo.
All right, having birthdays this week. One male, one female. Let's start with one who's no longer with us, but is important. Born May 27th, 1911, he was the heir to a candy company, modern art collector, and gourmet cook.
Willy Wonka.
With 203 credits as an actor, including classics like Leave Her to Heaven and Ten Commandments, The Fly,
Kirk Douglas,
House of Wax, House on Haunted Hill, Mask of Red Death.
Vincent Price! For real?
For real,
he's a gourmet chef.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, he had like a cooking show.
Try
and
my guacamole.
He had albums where he would talk about cooking, and they're really funny remixes.
This quiche is haunted.
That apple goes bad. I have a shrugging head kit. I'm splendid.
I got it, Dave.
Yeah.
Good job. All right. Took you fried. All I had left was Edward Scissorhands to mention. I'm surprised. All right.
Or Vincent.
Oh, I think we got to jump back in the song.
I'm on it.
All right.
All right. And then she was born May 26, 1948. She has sold more than 140 million albums.
Dolly Parton?
Including the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 soundtrack.
Diana Ross?
Wrote and performed songs including Dreams, Stop Dragging My Heart Around, Gypsy, The Chain.
Not Cher.
Go Your Own Way. Edge of
Stevie
17.
Nicks.
Stevie Nicks.
Boom! With the sweep. Dang, kid Chris Santista up here. I'm not even going to tell you my Twitter because I don't like using it. But go to LaserTimePodcast.com or one of our streams. I'm happy to talk to you. But yeah, check us out. What are we closing out with? I know what we can close out with.
What do you want to
close out with? I was going to play a terrible Smashing Pumpkins electronic song from the Batman and Robin soundtrack, but it looks like we got plenty of time to do that.
Yep.
Why not go out with the era-appropriate I Like Turtles techno remix? Thank you guys very much. We will see you next week.